It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Afraid here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, I have a special show for you today. We're going to talk about a lot of things. You know, we have Barbara Peterson on. She's a regular columnist for Freedom's Phoenix in regards to our health, you know, and surviving what's coming. We have, you know, she has a website called FarmWars.com. Let's go ahead. I'm sorry, FarmWars.info. FarmWars.info. I got you there, Barbara?
Yep, I'm here.
You know, let's go ahead and turn Barbara up a lot because she's down real low. One thing that I want to make sure that we know what we're going to be talking about today is that you live on a farm. You know, you're raising horses and geese and chickens and goats. You know, when I say got chickens in a garden, you're definitely get a gold star, do you not?
Well, I'm trying.
Now, this is the reason I wanted to talk to you today is fluoridation. I really want to spend some time on a fluoridation issue, and one of these days we'll really delve into it. I have in the past, and my position is this. There is, you know, a proper role of government, you know, defense of individual rights, protect life, liberty, property. And it's amazing to me, and certainly from a libertarian perspective, that you know, the government is so concerned about my teeth. They one thing they love more than anything else is my teeth. We're going to take care of your teeth. Ernie, we want you to have, you know, good white, pearly white and healthy teeth. We're going to put some stuff in the water for your teeth. And I'm going, why do I want forced or clandestine medication from the government? It's my first problem. You know, I trust them. If I want something, I'll go get it in my toothpaste or something. But, you know, what is the whole issue behind fluoridation? You have any history on it?
Oh, yeah. And actually, it can be summed up in one word, codex.
Tell me all about it.
All right. In a nutshell. We have to go back, take the way back machine, go back in history to Auschwitz concentration camp. Okay, a company called IG Farben, which is composed of BASF, Bayer, and a now defunct company called Hoechst or something like that. Anyway, they directed Fritz Demir, or Termeer, was a member of the managing board of that company, and he was responsible for Auschwitz. Now, he wanted to be able to control all of the population in there. And one of the ways that he found was best to do that was by drugging them. And the drug of choice was fluoride. This not only helped with the population because it induced sterility, but it also made them passive, so there would be less likely, and through starvation, less likely to revolt. And more likely to do exactly what they were told. Now, this man, he was convicted in Nuremberg trials of plundering and slavery, but his sentence was commuted. He had friends in high places. And he went on to become one of the architects of the Codex Alimentarius Commission. Now.
Okay, now first, explain to me Codex Alimentarius. You know, we hear about this a lot, and it's part, they get it in Europe, and they want to institute it here in the U.S., and they're making progress. Tell us what it's about.
Oh, it's here, and we don't know about it, but it is here, okay? It was created, by the FAO and WHO, the FAO, which is, something, my mind just went blank, an agricultural organization of the United Nations, and WHO, which is the health part of it. And they implemented CODEX, which is the joint FAO-WHO food standards program. Okay, now they say the purpose of it is to protect our health through food regulation. Okay, and they have made fluoridation a part of that health mandate. Now, you remember when WHO, with all this vaccine thing, was going on, and it was WHO saying that, oh, we've got a pandemic going on, and we want to get everybody vaccinated?
Okay. Oh, no, we were in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, they have mandated that fluoridation is necessary for dental health. Okay, now, since we are a part, the United States is a part of the United Nations, then we are obligated to go along with them. Now, there's a lot of people saying, oh, well, we don't have to do that. Well, of course. Okay, now, if you take something and you want to implement it, it's not going to be Shazam. This is not a microwave thing. You don't pop something in the microwave and, bam, 2 seconds later, it's implemented. When you have all kinds of people, especially with our background and how independent Americans tend to be, you have to implement this stuff in stages, and you have to keep the public completely in the dark. You do that by media manipulation through the mainstream media. You do it by doing programs by stealth. You don't let them know. You don't say, oh, this is a horse. No, you say, well, it's got four legs, it's got a tail, it's got a neck. You don't ever say horse. But you can tell by looking at it, and you can tell when you put the saddle on it and it whinnies, guess what? It's a horse. Well, that's exactly what we're seeing with CODEX. This thing has been going on since that commission was started in 1962. There are over 300 foods already regulated by CODEX. Okay,
Go ahead. For what reason? I mean, you know, and how this is, let's give a little bit of history of how, you know, it kind of rose to my attention. I remember in the 90s, they were making a big deal out of all of a sudden the people rised up. They rose up against demand when they were trying to regulate supplements. And when the European Union was created, I mean, you got it. It's like you got to get a prescription to get some vitamins we'd go buy at Walgreens. So. Yep. I'm going, you know, why would they, what was the it's like they don't want us to be healthy, you know, they want to control every aspect of our health so that they can make us healthier. I mean, is that their goal? There's, you know, I tell you what, so the audience gets an understanding. Let me see if I can get this to play. I want you to listen to this. This is Fox News. Let me give you a little bit of this and see if it'll spark some interest. Just go ahead and, you know, I'm going to play this, and here, wait a minute, let me get a reboot here so it'll play, because this is of great interest to me.
It's 8:32 now, with only 2 weeks left of 2009. We're taking a look back at some of the most interesting healthcare discoveries of the past year. Joining us is Fox 9 medical expert Dr. Arkel Georgiou to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, the U.S. has been adding a fluoride to its public water supply for decades, and that's, of course, to prevent tooth decay. Well, now researchers from Japan are suggesting that we add lithium. So why is that?
Well, they're actually not suggesting it, but they're certainly looking into it. Lithium is a medication that in prescription doses treats mood disorders in people with bipolar disorder or manic depressive illness. And what these researchers found in Japan is that it's lithium is present in trace amounts in the normal water supply in some communities. And in those communities, they have a lower suicide rate. And so they're really investigating whether trace amounts of lithium can just change the mood in a community enough to really, in a positive way, without having the bad effects of lithium, to really affect the mood and decrease the suicide rate. Very interesting concept.
Yeah, very interesting concept. Okay. So, I mean, you get to the point where they're starting to think about, you know, they're contemplating, you know, if we just added a little bit of lithium, and they're talking about it's in trace amounts somewhere. Oh, and, you know, and it has, you know, lower suicide rates. So I heard this exact same argument in the advocacy of fluoride. They go, in some of these communities where they have natural occurring fluoride, they have less tooth decay. So we need to put it in everybody's water. I can't think of any other chemical, certainly not in the public, pushed by the media so much, and these small communities. It happened here in Arizona, to where you have some of the communities around the valley, and all of a sudden they become bedroom communities of Phoenix, and then it just gets to this big metropolis, just kind of incorporates them, and all of a sudden they're not farm communities anymore. They're part of the big metropolis. And these guys are rising up against the man. They go, you know what? You need fluoridation. You gotta get in with the times here. We gotta get some fluoride in, y'all, because you're getting a little too ornery. You know, so this truly is a serious problem. When we come back with Barbara Peterson, we're gonna get into some more of the history and what's happening here. There's a problem. I'm feeling bad about this. Barbara's gonna help us navigate these waters. And we come back here and declare your independence in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
These are just a few of the images we've recorded. And you can see, it isn't what we thought. There's been no war here. And no terraforming event. The environment is stable. It's the PAX. The G23 Paxilon hydrochloride that we added to the air processors. It was supposed to calm the population, weed out aggression. Well, it works. The people here stopped fighting. And then they stopped everything else. They stopped going to work. They stopped breathing, talking, eating. There's 30 million people here and they all just let themselves die. I have to be quick. About a tenth of a percent of the population had the opposite reaction to the PAX. Their aggressor response increased beyond madness. They have become... well, they've killed most of us. And not just killed. They've done things.
Reavers. They made them.
I won't live to report this. But people have to know. We meant it for the best. To make people suffer. God!
And that is a scene from Serenity, the movie, and it was all about exactly this. It was about the concept that they can make people better. They can make them more acceptable to the state. They can put them under better control. And it was a very interesting series called Firefly, and it culminated in a motion picture called Serenity. And the whole thing about this was the government. You know, they took an entire planet that they had terraformed. They tried to keep it quiet, called Miranda. And what they did is they added chemicals to the air processors there that, you know, when they terraformed the planet and so on. And they wanted to do exactly what they're talking about with fluoridation and lithium. They want to make people happy. You know, we have so many problems going on right now with the economy and everything else. And certainly economy, you know, hits everybody. And you see on TV, they're like, do you feel bad? Are you upset? Are you depressed from the fact that, you know, your entire culture is falling apart? Well, we got a purple pill for you. This is, and they want to, you know, we're not getting enough people taking the pill. We just need to just add it to the water. To think that this wouldn't happen is to be naive, because it has already started to happen. Codex Alimentarius is Latin for, you know, food code or food book or something. It's a collection of internationally recognized standards. And I'm like, ooh, that makes me feel all kinds of, you know, wonderful. And, of course, it's associated with the United Nations, the World Health Organization, and it's all about we're here from a central plan to make sure that you get the right kind of, you know, Paxin in your diet so that you're all happy with whatever your situation is. I mean, how far off am I, Barbara?
Well, actually, I think you've hit it right on the nail.
So what are we to do about it? I mean, you know, one of the things I advocate on the show is, you know, we survived this thing, you know, but I mean, against what? It's overwhelming. And I, really, it's individual efforts just to, you know, raise your own chickens in the middle of Phoenix downtown and have your own backyard garden. And I'm sitting here just finished drinking my carrot and apple collard green juicing thing, you know, and I feel a lot better. I've been doing this for probably 7 months, two a day. And my morning breakfast and my lunch is that, and then I eat whatever in the evening. I should probably eat less of that. But, you know, I feel a lot better just by, you know, getting good quality nutrition. But mm-hmm. This is not the goal. As much as they would say, whenever the government says they're going to do something, it always seems to be the opposite. You know, food safety, food health, food whatever. We've got the pyramid and all this kind of stuff. And it's just, it's all lies. To what end?
You're right. It is. Total lies.
But
total
why?
Deception.
Why? I mean, what's the motivation? What's their goal?
What's the goal of the sociopath?
I don't know. Do whatever they want.
A sociopath or psychopath, kind of the same thing. They look at something and they say, they don't say, hey, that's a nice family. They have a nice car, a nice home, a nice life. They don't do that. They look at that and say, what's that guy doing with my car? That should be my family. That person has no right to those resources because those resources are mine. And this is exactly what we are seeing the people in charge.
You know, this mentality throughout history, I mean, it started with, I don't know, whatever excuse they can come up with, including religion. They're, you know, you're lucky it all belongs to God, and you're lucky he lets you keep 90%. Well, that kind of transfers to the government, and they go, well, it's all the government's, and you're lucky he's only taken half of it. You know, So I can understand the mentality and how this kind of centralized power draws these people to want to wear the ring of power, be behind the lever of power. And I tell you what my optimism is, though, where I get my optimism is that they have to spend trillions of dollars over generations using propaganda, corporate media, and the military industrial new world order empire complex of and the education in the government school system to try and convince individuals that they're right in taking the best of what we have and or just mm-hmm. all of it, and lucky we get to keep some. So it's not, but the promise the government has is that they're there to protect our individual rights. I mean, that's why they have to make that promise. We're going to do better for you. We're the solution. And when they do that, you know, a lot of people go, okay, yeah, well, you know, it's better you do it than I do it for myself because I'm lazy or whatever, or I drank my fluoride. And they don't. And they'll and now they're wanting to go into even more wars and so on. So I have optimism that in the end, maybe we'll survive this thing, but they are going to send us into the Stone Age in the process. So I'd like to hear from your perspective, you know, how is it that, what was it that was your career before you decided to play on the farm?
Well, I'm retired from the California Department of Corrections, Folsom Prison. I was a prison guard.
And
psychopaths in action. And what I saw in there and what I see leading our government is the same thing.
And then you went to do what? How did you get on that? You know, we have like a minute here. You know, just give me a quick rundown that you retired, you left, you whatever, and you said, I'm going to go live on the farm. How'd that come about?
Well, I'll tell you, I got tired of the prison system. It was just going a place where I didn't like. I already had horses. I already had a little ranch there, and I just wanted to get away from it all. So I ended up in Oregon, and I just started researching and deciding that, you know what, the way things are going, I need to start trying to become self-sufficient. So I got goats, a garden. We're working on trying to get off the grid. And the more research I did, the more I wanted to start sharing with other people and convincing them that, hey, the only way we're going to survive this thing is if we start becoming independent and starting to say no.
You know, when we come back, we're going into the break here in a little bit. When we come back, go ahead and make yourself some bullet point notes, because I want to walk it through. I mean, the first thing, you get on some open land there. What was it when you first got there? Did it have buildings? Did it have, you know, barns and so on? And then you started to add animals. Which animals did you pick? Why did you pick them? How hard are they to raise? What kind of nutrition can you get out of them? How do they interrelate with all the other animals? What's the most nutritious foods? I mean, I want to get to, you know, I want the audience to survive. I just want them, we just got to survive this thing. So when we come back, Barbara Peterson is going to help us from practical firsthand experience on this. So get some paper and pen. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
This report is maybe 12 years old. Parliament buried it, and it stayed buried until the river dug it up. This is what they feared she knew. And they were right to fear. Because there's a whole universe of folk who are going to know it too. They're going to see it. Somebody has to speak for these people. Y'all got on this boat for different reasons, but y'all come to the same place. So now I'm asking more of you than I have before. Maybe all. As sure as I know anything, I know this. They will try again. Maybe on another world, maybe on this very ground swept clean. A year from now, 10, they'll swing back to the belief that they can make people better. And I do not hold to that. So no more running. I am to misbehave.
Yeah, misbehave. Well, that's what they're trying to prevent. The scope of the Codex Alimentarius officially is it covers all foods, whether processed, semi-processed, or raw. But far more attention has been given to foods that are marketed directly to consumers. In addition to standards for specific foods, the Codex Alimentarius contains general standards covering matters such as food labeling, food hygiene, food additives, and pesticide residues, and procedures for assessing the safety of foods derived from modern biotechnology, GMOs. Genetically modified organisms. It also contains guidelines for the management of official, i.e. governmental, import and export inspection and certification systems for foods. I mean, this is, it's published in Arabic and Chinese and English, French, Spanish. This is a worldwide control of everybody's body and, more importantly, their mind through the stuff that we put in our mouth. And I'm...
Exactly.
I'm how... And wow, I mean, this is, how can you ignore this? So and there's been a constant drumbeat, you know, for them to be able to do this. Now tell me, how has this been exported into the United States? How did they do that, and to what extent?
Well, when the United States said, yeah, we're going to be with the UN. In fact, the United States was critical in the formation of the United Nations. I mean, we've been a part of it since it started.
Well, I mean, in the aspect of the Codex Alimentarius, what is the legislation? What is it? We say, yes, we want to be part of that. When did that happen? I remember this started back in the 90s, and it was a big resistance to it. But, of course, behind the scenes, they're kind of marching towards this.
You see, that's the deception. Okay, Codex has been implementing since, I believe, it started, what, 1962, and their food regulations started coming up in 1964. We had the list of 300 in 1966. And everybody's all up in arms because they say, oh, well, the vitamins, the minerals, the supplements, oh, they're going to get those. Well, that's only the next step. Like I said before, this isn't a microwave issue. It's not going to happen. Oh, all of a sudden, here's Codex. We've been doing it. We're in the middle of the pot, and the water is heating up. Now, some of us frogs are jumping up and down and going, oh, my goodness, we're here.
Well, part of I'm sorry, go ahead.
And other frogs are going, nah, I don't feel it yet, so it's not here.
This is, I tell you what I liken it to. You know, I had gone through this in the mid-90s when there was a lot of people, you know, that believe that government's there to save us, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency that Nixon, of all people, brought in to existence. And they go, well, you got to have Environmental Protection Agency. And I mean, how many times have we had this? Did we learn anything yet? Whatever the government calls something, it's always the opposite. So yep. It's really a corporate, you know, we can pollute agency. And what happened was, I give you an example. During the 60s, there was the libertarian solution, which was these people in industry are poisoning the land, the sea, the air, and we are going to file suit. There were class action suits. There was enormous amounts of pollution that were being done by corporations because it was cheaper. I mean, because we can't. Well, they went in and people were having their land and water and such polluted, so they would file suit, do class actions. You have billions of dollars that they're being subjected to in civil suits. So they went running to the government for protection. They created the EPA, and the EPA says, oh, this is bad. And they went after some, you know, guys for political reasons or, you know, because the people were up in arms. But what happened was they said, we're going to set allowable standards for pollution. This is how much you are allowed to pollute. And they would set the standards. And it wasn't done in court. It wasn't done by people that were actually damaged. It wasn't done by them showing, you know, this has done this. They go, oh, it doesn't matter because they polluted within this level set by the government. So I saw that happen here in Arizona. In Phoenix, if you're in real estate, which my wife is, and she has these maps, the whole valley goes up on the wall. You know, you got gridded out and different property, all that kind of stuff. The entire Phoenix area is a super fun cleanup. Whenever you buy or sell a home here in Phoenix, you sign a piece of paper saying, yes, I understand that the groundwater is contaminated, and I'm not going to, you know, sink a well and drink of it. Because there were a lot of older homes here that had actual wells that went down, because underneath the Salt River that runs through Phoenix here, there's an enormous amount of water underneath Phoenix. So you can live on, you know, that's how they do all the farming around here. We're number three in the country, or two, depending on the frost in Florida and California, for citrus. Well, the reason is, you add water to sunshine and you get plants. Well, Arizona is an enormous agricultural area, but they get their water from underneath the ground. Well, there's a lot of it there. Well, what happened was all of a sudden they're finding out people were having, you know, cancer clusters and that kind of thing. And there was a Motorola plant that was here in Phoenix that was discharging a bunch of their effluent and stuff into the ground, and it started getting into the well water. So they sued them, and they go, oh, yeah, you know, and then they call it was a Superfund site. They're going to have to clean it up. They're going to make a big, giant deal. Well, it goes through the process. It's years in the courts. And then all of a sudden you started seeing on television and employees from Motorola wearing Motorola shirts that are out in the fields picking lettuce and so on for the hungry poor people. And I'm like, what the heck is that about? They were trying to condition the jury pool. When they were going to go to it, they wanted everybody to have warm, fuzzy feelings about Motorola. They knew a few million dollars here may save them $100 million in a judgment. So that was the mindset. And I knew this because I knew one of the attorneys. Well, what happened then was the Superfund site. We're going to have to spend gazillions of dollars to clean up the riverbed. And then all of a sudden, right before it goes to trial, the EPA changes the standard. Oh, this level is no longer pollution. This is. They just move the number. And they go, well, it doesn't matter. Well, you know, it's legal now. And I'm going, wow, wow, wow. Well, now, under Codex Alimentarius, what are they talking about? They're talking about genetically modified foods and even pesticides. So they're going, mm-hmm. you have pesticides. Well, this is a safe level of pesticide. And I'm going, says who? You know, and then they changed the definition of what organic is. They changed the definition of, you know, what natural is and all this. So this genetically modified stuff, what do you know about that?
Oh, that's my little favorite topic.
I get ulcers in anticipation of you telling me.
Well, I started talking with Susan Bardosh, and she is the wife of our pod, Pushtai. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And they were the first whistleblowers for genetically modified potatoes. And Arpad came out. He was contracted by the university to do the study, and he did it, and he came out with the truth in the news. Well, there was a phone call, and evidently it was coming from Monsanto to the United States government to the UK government, and he was subsequently fired. His reputation was ruined, and he was gagged. Now,
for what? What was he saying?
For saying the truth that genetically modified food is bad for you. It he found in the rats that it did something to their organs. They were atrophied. They were very, very tiny. The little in a there's a Russian study showing that mice that ate genetically modified soy had a 56% mortality rate in their infants.
You know, when we come back, there's some other things that genetically modified food. I mean, it actually starts, your body starts producing cellulose, and it's itching, and it's like paper being created under the skin. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we're being subjected to, and it's given a legal, acceptable standard by your government. Right back.
Mm-hmm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, at Barbara Peterson online from farmwars.info. Farmwars.info, and I'm looking it up. I remember what it's called. It's called Morgellons disease, and Morgellons is suffers report strange fiber-like material sticking out of sores or wounds that erupt on the skin. This is accompanied by painful, intense itching that has been described as an ever-present sensation as if something is crawling underneath your skin. And this has been reported, and so they started finding out that people that consume a lot of the genetically modified organism, you know, plants and so on, that there's a side effect. They didn't. I mean, when you start messing around with nature, I don't know what the heck you think is going to happen, but you start getting these lesions, and you're growing paper or fibers, cellulose, underneath your skin. This is like nasty, man. You know. So, what do you know about that, Barbara?
Well, I'll tell you, I have had a personal experience, and I also wrote an article actually a couple of years ago on that. But my personal experience was I was eating a lot of processed foods. I didn't think anything about it. It started with a small spot on my lower right leg, and it just itched and oozed, and it was horrible. I couldn't stop wanting to scratch it. It kept me up at night, and then it started spreading. It went up my leg, it went all the way up to my shoulders, it was down the other leg, and this is like the worst poison oak in that you could ever have. It just itched, oozed, and it felt like things were just crawling all over me. I couldn't stand it. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to eat. because food, every time I ate something, it got worse. So I cut myself off of just about everything. I lost a lot of weight. I went down to, I cut off milk. I cut off processed foods. I went down to stuff like raw carrots, raw vegetables, and it started clearing up. Okay, once it started clearing up and I was feeling better, then I started adding things back into my diet. I started adding milk, and I found out that it had RBGH hormone in it, genetically modified. When I drank the milk, I'd break out again. Had to get rid of it. Got a goat's milk. I could drink that. I was okay. If I ate things like corn, processed corn, canned corn, tortilla chips, something like that, genetically modified, I would start to break out. I'm like a GMO barometer. I eat something GMO, I start to break out. I have been lesion-free now for a couple of years. And I've also tried to get almost every GMO thing out of my diet that I possibly could. But if I eat something that has GMO in it, I will feel little bumps starting to come on my skin.
Well, tell me how you've tried to get away from this. I mean, you're in Oregon now. Tell me about your transition to Oregon on your farm. What were the first animals that you did? How did you feed yourself? What are the things that you're growing? You know, let's walk it through for the audience.
Okay, well, one of the things that I would have done differently is I would have investigated water and land, because I've got a shelf here about 18 inches down. What you want is some good land that has good drainage. Otherwise, you have problems because you want growth. Okay. Now, the horses I've always had, and I love them. I'm going to keep them. And if everything goes down, I can use them for plowing, transportation, that kind of thing. Now, goats are wonderful. Nubian goats, they have the best milk. And they're browsers. They're not grazers. So they will eat. If you have sage or whatever on your property, they'll go ahead and eat it. You have to remember, though, that whatever they eat, that taste is going to be in the milk.
Well, is it harmful or in any way, or is it just flavor?
Just flavor.
Okay.
So if you want some really, really good, sweet-tasting milk, you feed them alfalfa. And then you'll get that nice, sweet milk. Now, goat's milk has just about every kind of vitamin, mineral you'd ever want. You can live on goat's milk. Now, the garden, you have to research your area, what's going to grow well. Here, we've got an extremely short growing season. Can't plant until mid-June. And then it starts freezing again around mid to end September. So what grows well here are root crops, carrots, beets, turnips. Also, cabbage grows good here, spinach, and I've got some onions.
Do you have any fruit trees or citrus or anything like that?
Oh, I wish.
A little too far north for a lot of stuff?
Yeah, it, unless you have a greenhouse or you have, there's the only thing out here where I'm is at is juniper trees and a couple of pines. So Medford, Oregon has the nice fruit. But we do have some raspberries growing out here, and I'm babying them along.
Well, what do you find to be the most nutritious? How do you supplement from outside of your garden? I mean, because you got to, you know, I don't know how much you're able to feed yourself from your own little farm, but if you have to go outside, you know, what are you selecting? Are you going to the grocery store?
Well, I'll tell you, between two people, I have got it down, and I can feed between the garden, everything else, and the store. It's, about $120 a month average.
Well, what kind of things do you supplement your own growth with? I mean, you're going out to buy what from the store? And what kind of store are you going to?
We've got a cash and carry, and that has bulk. It services restaurants. So what I do is I go ahead and buy in bulk, and you can buy things in bulk and then separate them into containers and store them. Set up a room for a food storage area and then just put it in the other containers. As you say, I save everything. I save all the containers that I've ever had just about, and I put things in there. Diatomaceous earth will get rid of bugs and stuff like that, and you have to make sure you don't have any rats or mice trying to get into things.
Now, this is diatomaceous earth. Let's go ahead and tell people what that is. I have a lot. We store our own rice and beans and some stuff that we've stored away, and what it, it's like a really fine white powder. It's almost like talcum powder, but it's really just crushed up fossils or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's shells. And, well, fossil, you know, the shells from some sort of bug or whatever, I don't know.
Well, you know, as I had it explained to me, what it is that when it gets on the bodies of the insects, it doesn't allow them to breathe, or it kills them in some way, because you can put it in a tablespoon in water and drink it. I mean, you know, it gets rid of parasites mm-hmm. and stuff. So it's a very natural way of keeping insects out of your dried storage, so you don't have boll weevils and, you know, and whatever the heck in there. And so that's, and a lot of times also my wife, for some reason, I can't remember, she adds it to the soil or something. But I know, I tell you mm-hmm. what, we had a problem. We have a little above ground pool in the back that we put up in the summer over the garden, because here it's different. In Arizona, the summer, when it's 115 degree, you know, nothing likes growing. And it's just too much of a pain in the butt. So we have a little above ground pool, 16-foot pool that we have, and we enjoy getting in it. But it also has just water storage. I mean, you're in the middle of summer here. It's always nice to have, you know, some thousands of gallons of water. But we have like this indoor-outdoor AstroTurf green carpet that kind of goes around it. It's just more convenient for us, so it doesn't have mud. But what happens is little insects get in there, and we start getting little bites and ants and so on that gets in there. So she takes this diatomaceous earth and spreads it out over that green AstroTurf. Boom, insects are gone. You know, so I'm going, you know, this is pretty good stuff. You know, it's very inexpensive, and it's natural as heck. It doesn't hurt any of the animals or chickens or anything. Heck, it's probably good for them. You just go and you spread it out mm-hmm. all over, problem solved. So yeah, that's a good bit of information for people. Now, the other thing is that as you've accumulated this stuff, when you get into your long winters, you know, what are you feeding yourself with, the stuff that you've accumulated, the stuff you have in storage? How much are your animals supplying you?
Yeah. One of the basics is rice, and I like to stock up on whole wheat flour and pure cane sugar, the brown, and then dry the vegetables.
Hey, Barbara, can you stay one more segment? Yeah, I want to ask you some more questions. We'll go at least another segment here when we come back at the top of the hour on Declare Your Independence. Because, you know, this is someone that writes regularly on Freedom's Phoenix. She sees, you know, this kind of stuff that concerns her, and she puts it up there. And if you were to, you know, just search her name on Freedom's Phoenix, you'd find all kinds of good stuff that we all need to know. And we'll get back to the fluoridation thing a little bit. I want to get some more on that. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Barbara Peterson from FarmWars.info.